extend a welcome to each one who is here this morning. Special welcome to visitors. We're glad to have you here with us. I greet you in Jesus' name. It's good to be gathered in his house with friends. You know, Martin talked about friends this morning, and it's good to have friends. It's good to have Christian friends. He also talked about, he didn't really say these words, but he talked about perspective. Perspective. He talked about choices that we make. You know, in each of those situations that he shared, each of those stories that he shared, there was a choice that needed to be made. And there was a perspective through which that choice was made. And that is what shapes the choices that we make, our perspective. This morning I'd like to talk about perspective and choices. Title of the sermon this morning is The Antidote for Uncertainty. And you could put some different words in there, especially when you think of uncertainty. Maybe you could put worry or anxiousness or some things like that. But the antidote for uncertainty, we all face times of uncertainty. And while we never know what the future holds, at any given point, we don't know what tomorrow holds. We don't know what the future holds. There are particular times where we feel more unsettled, and we feel anxious, and we feel concerned about the future. Maybe we're in a situation that what we call normal has just gone out the door, and our normal world has been overturned. It's upside down. And we face some of that here with this COVID-19 experience, where what we think is normal and what we wish was normal again is gone. And are we ever going to see normal again? You know, are we going to see normal again? We don't know. There's other times in life that we're searching for answers, and we have complexities and difficulties in life. We all face them. And maybe the answers seem non-existent, or they seem vague, or they seem difficult. We think that's the answer, but it's really hard. It's really hard. Or maybe we just feel like the answer is not there. The answer is vague. And it's natural in times like these to succumb to feelings of uncertainty. We can face stress in our current situation just because life brings us stress. And but often our stress is as we think about the future and we wonder what the future situations are going to be like. Or we worry. And worry is always thinking about the future. We don't worry about what is happening right now. We know what is happening right now, but worry is thinking about what might happen. It may be just in the next couple of minutes. It may be a month, a year, it may be longer term. But worry is always when we contemplate the future and it is uncertain. Someone has said, life is uncertain, eat dessert first. And that's somewhat of a humorous way, a comical spin on the truth that life is uncertain. We do not know what the next moment holds. We don't. It could change drastically in a very short time. James says it this way, "Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city and continue there a year, and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time, then vanisheth away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that." Okay, it's just a vapor. You know how fast that steam disappears when it comes out of the teapot. That is what our life is like. So we think of uncertainty. And I gave this simple definition to uncertainty is simply living in fear of the unknown. Living in fear of the unknown. The antidote for uncertainty, what is antidote? Well, antidote is a medicine taken or given to counteract a particular poison. That's in the medical field. That's a medical term. Counteracting a particular poison by a medicine. Another definition for antidote is something that counteracts or neutralizes an unpleasant feeling or situation. Okay, we don't like uncertainty. We don't like unknown. It's an unpleasant feeling or situation. So what is the antidote for that? Living in fear of the unknown is like a poison. It can cause illness or death when it is absorbed. It will affect our physical life. It will affect our spiritual life. It will affect our emotional life. It will affect our relationships. It will affect how we get along with our friends. It'll affect how we get along with our family. When we live in that fear of the unknown, it will affect our performance. And you can put all kinds of things into that word performance. Just, you know, doing your work and whatever you're called to do, whatever your responsibilities are, it will affect those things. It will affect how satisfied or how content we feel about life, how satisfied we are with our situation, with our circumstances. It is all affected by this, if we live in the fear of the unknown. Well, what is the antidote for uncertainty? The world offers various pills for that poison. It may even be in the form of an actual pill given to dull the senses to the realities of life. The world may do that. You have fear of the unknown? Take this pill. It will help you cope. Maybe the world offers that macho attitude of no fear. No fear. I don't fear the unknown. I am not afraid. The macho attitude. Maybe it offers things like entertainment or amusement. And again, things that will dull our senses to the realities, to the actual, to the real. There's things like vacations and getaways and pleasures and fun, social events. And those things are not all wrong. In fact, those things are maybe even necessary, done in moderation and done for the right purpose. But the world can offer those things to help us cope with a fear of the unknown, a coping mechanism. Is that the answer to this uncertainty? Is that the answer to living in the fear of the unknown? These things can be like a bandage that covers up the real problem. And when you get past the thrill of the event or the party or the weekend or the vacation, you get past that thrill, the uncertainty is still there and maybe even stronger than it was before. David experienced stressful situations in his life, and we could enumerate on those. You know them. You know the story of David. He experienced many uncertainties in life. Here's what he says. Here's his testimony. I had fainted, or I had succumbed to fear and anxiety unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. And so I believe the antidote for uncertainty is waiting on the Lord. Waiting upon the Lord. You can open your Bibles to Isaiah chapter 40. Isaiah chapter 40 gives us an illustration here. It talks about waiting upon the Lord, and it gives us a natural illustration. And I'd like to look at that just a bit this morning to draw some lessons and some encouragement for us to think about how we face the uncertainties of life, how we deal with those uncertainties. Isaiah chapter 40, the very last verse, verse 31, says, "But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint." Now, he uses the illustration of the eagle, and among other things, eagles are known for their speed. They're known for their flight agility, their flight ability. They're known for their strength. And in the Bible, there's various times that the eagle is referred to. In his lament following the death of Saul and Jonathan, in his lament, David said, "They were swifter than eagles." Okay, just referring to the attributes of Saul and Jonathan, the good attributes. He says they were swifter than eagles. It is said that a bald eagle can reach speeds of 75 to 99 miles per hour when diving. Okay, that is a very fast speed for a small creature like that. And there are other eagles that I believe approach close to 200 miles per hour. But the bald eagle that we know of here in the United States can reach up to 99 miles per hour when diving. They're swift. Eagles are strong as well. Bald eagle was recorded flying with a 15-pound mule deer fawn, which is heavier than the eagle itself. Probably, anyway. The very heaviest eagles are usually 12 pounds, something like that. There are some larger ones, about 15 pounds, but this one was carrying a 15-pound mule deer, probably heavier than the eagle itself. And with its strength, with the wings, It lifted it up off the ground, carrying that heavy burden. The proverb writer includes the way of the eagle in the air as one of the things that is beyond, that is too wonderful for us to comprehend, beyond our understanding. And I have very little experience watching an eagle flying in the air, but they say they can do some amazing things, and their agility and their flight behavior and patterns. And the proverb writer, in thinking about that, he says that's one of the things that we can't understand, the way of an eagle in the air. With their large wingspan, their broad wings, their strong muscles, and vast number of feathers. They say they have 7,000 feathers. These all contribute to eagles being excellent flyers. And as we think of an eagle, we think of them being a symbol of courage and a symbol of fearlessness. And they can conquer anything. And they're not afraid of the storms. They're not afraid of the winds. And so people look at an eagle as being a symbol of courage and power. But even though an eagle has this great strength and power, it can soar to its greatest heights with little effort. And that's an amazing thing that I'd like to think about with an eagle this morning. Not about so much about its strength and its power, but the fact that it can soar to its greatest heights with little effort. And that's when it takes advantage of the circumstances it finds itself in. And think about that thought as we think about facing uncertainties of life and waiting upon the Lord and finding our strength. The eagle's greatest heights come when it takes advantage of the circumstances that it finds itself in, and with little effort of its own, soars up high into the sky. Let me tell you about a firsthand observation. I said I didn't often see eagles fly, but there was a time when we were, every October, my wife's family gets together to cabin in the Texture Mountain, and probably a year and a half ago, we were sitting there in the middle of the day, Saturday. It was a beautiful October day. Sun was shining. There might have been a few high clouds, I don't remember, but we were right around the middle of the day. We were sitting on the deck, had a snack out there. We were eating, relaxing, and looked up in the sky, and we see an eagle up there, and it was going around and around and around, just making circles. And as it made those circles, it wasn't flapping its wings at all. It was just going around and around, and it went higher and higher and higher with each circle, higher and higher. And so we were observing it and watching it. And after a while, we said, oh, there's another eagle. So sure enough, there was two of them going around and around and around. One was higher, one was lower. And so we were there, you know, socializing, not necessarily paying attention to what all was going on with the eagles. But after a while, I glanced up and I could only see one eagle. And so I was watching, you know, did the other one disappear? Did it go up above a cloud? I wasn't sure. Couldn't tell. They were getting higher. I mean, it was going higher and higher. There's only one eagle up there. And so I decided I'm going to watch, keep my eye on that eagle to see what happens. See if that one also disappears or what it does. And so I watched. It went higher and higher and higher. And all of a sudden, it was way up there. And it did a little bit of a half a wing flap. And it straightened itself out and it took off going south. Not flapping, just gliding. And there it went. Across the sky. I'm guessing because of where we were and where it was headed, maybe it was going back to Middle Creek Wildlife. I don't know. There's a couple eagles there. But I'm assuming that the first eagle had done the same thing. And the second eagle, when it got high enough, it just did, like I said, about half a flap to straighten out its course, and it took off gliding without flapping its wings, without movement. How did it get there? How did it get up to that point? Well, with very little effort of its own, simply by using the rising thermals. It started off as a cool day, and it was warming up, and that warm air from the ground was rising up, and it rode those thermals up higher and higher. And then I suppose it caught a wind stream that was going the way that it wanted to go. And when it got there, it soared off. So what does Isaiah say? He says that they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. And the picture I want you to get is the eagle not flapping its wings to gain those heights and to lift itself off. Sure, it needs to do that at first to get started. But using its wings and relying on another power to lift it up higher and higher and then take it where it needs to go. You go back a couple verses before that. He says in verse 29, he giveth power to the faint and to them that have no might. He increases strength. And then he says, even the youths shall faint and be weary. And the youths there just means anyone from infancy to adolescence. Now, when you think about your young children or observe a young child, there is a lot of energy and a lot of motion. They don't tire easily. They can run around all day long, and maybe till the end of the day they're worn out. But compare that to us older folks, and we, to try and keep up with them, we get tired. Okay, but he says here, Isaiah says that even the youths, even the children, get tired. They faint and be weary. They become tired, exhausted, and weary. And then he goes on to say that young men shall utterly fall. And again, we think of young men as a symbol of strength and energy. And someone in their prime of life, and they can do a lot of things. They can lift a lot of weight. They can do a lot of hard work. But he says that the young men are going to stumble or shall utterly fall. And what the word there means is stagger or totter because of weak legs or weak ankles. And it's a picture of a senior, okay? As we grow older, and some of you understand this better than me even, but as you grow older, you are less stable upon your legs and upon your feet. And after a while, maybe you use a cane to walk. Think about a senior. But it says even the young men are going to stagger and totter just like an old man does. And what he's saying is that the frailty of humans, even at their best, even at a time of life when they are full of energy, and even at a time of life when they're in their prime and they are strong, even at their best, we are weak, we are frail, we get tired, we get exhausted, we stumble, and we fall, and we totter. And these uncertainties of life can cause us to become disheartened or depressed or withdrawn. And maybe we become lethargic and give up. What is the use of pushing on? It's tiring. It's exhausting. What is the use of expending energy when our efforts seem so futile? Well, maybe we need to adjust our focus or readjust our focus. You know, when I think that life is not going right, and when I think that what's ahead is difficult, it's probably because it's the way I view life and the way I think life should be. And maybe I need to think about what God wants for me and what God wants out of my life and what God has in store for me. The plan and purpose that God has for your life or for my life, they could look quite different. But often we look at other people's lives and we try and decide that that's how our life should look. And then we can become disheartened and we can become concerned about the future. But he calls us to wait. He says to wait. And the word means to wait. Yes, you know, to wait as we understand wait, but it also means to hope and to expect and to look for something. Okay, it's that hope and that trust that we can have in something bigger than ourselves. Waiting takes patience. You know, we've all heard people say, we've probably said it ourselves, that I'm just ready for it to get back to normal. Just want it to be back like it used to be. I liked how it was. Well, waiting takes patience. James says, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience, but let patience have her perfect work, that she may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. Patience having her perfect work, it doesn't mean that the situation is going to go back to normal. It doesn't mean that all the obstacles are going to be out of the way, but it means that patience can have the perfect work in our lives. Waiting takes perseverance. Again, God does not promise to deliver us from the obstacles or the difficulties or the unknown or the uncertainties, but he does promise strength to endure the difficulties. He does say that he will renew our strength. Waiting takes diligent seeking. Proverbs says, I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me. Seeking diligently. You know, having a heart that desires to know what God wants for my life. Seeking God diligently. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. Again, just the call to draw nigh to God and allow him, in that drawing nigh to him, to God, he draws nigh to us. It's that waiting. It's that expectation, that hope, that trust. Waiting takes discipline. And we don't like to discipline ourselves. We would rather just take the easy route, but waiting takes discipline. It takes commitment. And again, we can struggle with committing our hearts, committing our lives, because once I have committed, then I'm tied in, then I'm locked in. As long as I don't commit, then it's kind of open-ended. I can decide what I want to do, how I want to do it, when I want to do it, but it takes commitment. You know, I wonder, with our response to COVID-19, has our response strengthened our commitment to God and to his people? Have we grown in a disciplined life? Have we used the opportunities, the challenges that we face to grow in our discipline and in our commitment? You know, when I look at my own experience, I can see how easy it is to relax in areas that require effort and work. And our whole, maybe our routine has changed, and maybe we weren't as busy as we were before. And that some of that is good and right, and we have to be careful about what we become busy with again. But in that whole relaxed state or condition, have we digressed in our commitment, in our discipline? And I just wonder, how do we decide who we listen to and how we process the information and how we respond to the information we received and the response to this pandemic? And, you know, I find it a challenge in my own life because we want to be cautious and we want to be careful. But is it possible that we can feel safer about something such as gathering with a huge crowd in an outdoor venue? Or, and I'm not suggesting that any of you visit Hershey Park, but visiting a place like Hershey Park, because there are people in the know that we often wonder about their wisdom anyway and following their guidelines and direction, but there's people in the know that say it's safe to do it. And maybe the same people challenge on whether we should continue schooling as we know it, or whether we should gather for other large social functions, maybe religious gatherings or religious functions. And all of a sudden, we can look at that and we can say, you know what? I feel safer about going to an outdoor venue with a lot of people that I don't even know than gathering with God's people in God's house. Or we can become more comfortable with camping and outdoor activities like that because it's approved. And it's vacationing among people that we don't know who they are, where they came from, what they've been doing, or how sick they are or not, or when they're going to get sick. We can become more comfortable with that than gathering for worship with God's people, people we know. And you think about that and think about the disciplines in your life and think about the commitments. And that's things that I struggle with and think about and try to work through. How much of a normal life can I live in shopping and working and yard sailing and other activities that we deem necessary, but then I draw back on kingdom interests and kingdom work? And you know, it's a challenge, and it's something that we need to be real with and we need to think about. Brendan challenged us with the we're planning to start services next Sunday. Can you be here at 9:00? It's a half hour earlier than you've had to be here for the last however many weeks. Actually, it's been several months since we gathered at 9:00. There's people that are going to have to teach Sunday school. Maybe you enjoyed the break, okay? But think about your commitment. Think about the disciplines in your life. Think about how this whole processing, this whole thing. And again, I'm not saying to throw caution out the door, and it may be necessary to take some precautions. But let's just make sure we don't use this as an excuse to waver in our disciplines in our own life and commitment to Christ, to kingdom work, to kingdom interests. Waiting requires effort. One writer said of waiting, it does not imply inactivity or want a personal exertion. It implies merely that our hope of aid and salvation is in him. And so waiting requires effort. We can't decide that we're waiting on God, and so we don't do anything. After all, if waiting on God increases our strength or gives us strength, as it says it does here, this word renew could be said exchanged or change or exchange. And so if waiting upon God exchanges our weakness for the strength of God, then don't you think he expects us to do something with that strength? And so if we obtain the strength, what's the point of just sitting there and doing nothing? Well, waiting includes effort, includes work. Waiting is a cooperation of ourselves, our circumstances, and our God, working together for our good and the furtherance of God's plan for our lives. And I so often, for myself, I miss the point that our circumstances play a vital role in this cooperation. And just like the eagles, use those winds, use those circumstances to lift them up. We can do the same thing in our lives. It is possible to wait, but wait for the wrong thing. We talked about that a little bit already. But if our health is failing, we could be waiting for our health to improve. If we are in financial difficulty, we could be waiting for an improved financial condition. Maybe it's a difficult relationship that we're in and we're waiting for it to get better. Maybe as parents, you feel the weight of raising your small children and you're waiting for them to grow up and be responsible and take care of themselves. And those are not all wrong things, okay? Don't get me wrong. We do desire good health and we do desire financial stability. We do desire our children to grow up. That's all good things. But we can get our focus on waiting on the wrong thing and waiting for the wrong thing. And maybe in all that, we try to escape reality. We talked about that already through pleasures or vacation or hobbies or other entertainment or amusement. And when those tough times come, we do look for ways out. That is right. But if our only focus is on having a brighter tomorrow or a better future, you know, I'm afraid we're going to be disappointed too many times because we are not promised a better tomorrow. You look at conditions on a national level and a global level, and we see things worsening, not getting better. And so to think that tomorrow will be better, well, it may be, but it may be worse. So then what can we wait for? What do we wait upon? Well, he says here that we are to wait upon the Lord. And that word, the Lord, is Yahweh. It's Jehovah. It's the self-existent one. It's the eternal one. And in the prior verses in Isaiah 40, he goes through and he talks about who this Lord is, who the God is, who Jehovah is, who Yahweh is. And beginning in verse 12, Isaiah 40, chapter 12, I like to think about this and compare who God is to the smallness and the humanity and the frailty of humanity and the weakness of us as humans. And I'd just like to go down through here quickly, and as he compares, as he talks about who God is, he says in verse 12, who hath measured the waters in the hollow of his hand? Think about all the waters in the oceans that God can just measure them by holding out his hand, by opening up the hollow of his hand, and meted out heaven with the span, and comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in scales and the hills in a balance. Just talking about the bigness of God and the greatness of God, we measure things by time and space. That's how we measure things. But those finite measurements cannot compare with the infinite God. And it just says this huge earth can be measured in such a small part of our big God. Verse 13 and 14, it talks about his wisdom. It talks about who directed the Spirit of the Lord, or who was his counselor, who was his advisor. You know, when we get into a difficult time, the best place to go is to somebody that is wiser than us, somebody that has more experience than us, somebody that has a better understanding than us. Well, who is it that God goes to for those challenges or those questions? Well, it is no one, because there is no one that is wiser than him. There is no one that knows more than him. There is no one that can be his advisor, his teacher, his counselor. He goes on to talk about the nations in verse 15. The nations are as a drop in a bucket. Think about how big the nations think they are. And nations could be talking about people, but let's think about people groups and nations as we know them. You know, the United States or China or Russia. And all those, think about how big and important they think they are and how powerful they think they are. And God says they're just like a drop in a bucket. Small dust in a balance. If you're weighing something, there's a little bit of dust on it. We don't brush it off first because it doesn't make a difference. That's how small the nations are. He goes on to say that in verse 17, all nations before him are as nothing, and they are counted to him less than nothing. How do you measure something that is less than nothing? Well, you go into the negative, but that's when he looks down at people. And yet, individual people, we can think we're pretty big and pretty important. And God says the nations altogether are less than nothing. The nations that jostle for power and jostle for position and try to overcome other nations and be bigger and better and stronger than others. And God says there is nothing. Down to verse 22, he says that it is he that sitteth, talking about God, sitteth upon the circle of the earth, and the inhabitants thereof are as grasshoppers. And so that's what we're like, just a little grasshopper. Consideration to the big God that stretcheth out the heavens as a curtain, spreadeth them out as a tent to dwell in. And so God gives us this habitation, the earth to inhabit, as a tent. He just stretches it out, sets up a tent for us to dwell in. That's how big God is. He goes on in verse 23 to talk about people that are powerful. He talks about princes and judges, that they are nothing and they are vanity. And you can think about presidents, you can think about governors, you can think about prime ministers, you can think about the world leaders, people that are important and that are powerful and that hold a lot of power. You know, in their power and their positions, there is nothing before this Almighty God. And that's the God that we are called to wait upon. We are called to exchange our weakness for his strength. The psalmist said, "When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon, the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him?" What is man in comparison to God? Man is small. Man is insignificant. And so you would think that with such a great God offering to exchange our weakness for his strength, you would think it would be easy, right? It should be simple. It should be the easy thing to do, to trust in him and just commit our lives to him, commit our future to him. But it's not. It's not that simple. We like to be in control of our lives. We feel like when we're in control, we can kind of decide where we're going to end up and how we're going to go. It's natural for us. We want to decide what we can do and where we should go and what we want to do. We like to decide those things, and so we like to have a little bit of control over what happens. But when we give up, when we wait on the Lord and renew our strength, we need to give up, and we need to let our lives in his hand. The psalmist understood this, and he did many verses that he talked about waiting on the Lord. And we looked at some already where David said that he waited on the Lord, even in his difficult circumstances. Just a couple of other times when he said, "Lead me in thy truth and teach me, for thou art the God of my salvation. On thee do I wait all the day." It's a challenge all the day. We go throughout our days. I go throughout my day, and I make decisions and choices based on what I think is right and where I want to go and where I think I want to end up. We are called to wait on the Lord all the day. Psalm 27:14, "Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thy heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord." That's the verse we read before. Be of good courage, he shall strengthen thy heart. Psalm 37:7 says, "Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Fret not thyself because of him who prospereth in the way, because of the man who bringeth wicked devices to pass." You know, in this whole conversation that surrounds where we're at, "Fret not thyself because of the man who bringeth wicked devices to pass." What does that mean? There's a lot of talk about men who are trying to manipulate this thing. And it could well happen. I'm not saying it's a far out theory, but men that are trying to manipulate this whole thing and determine the course of humans in the future and what we do and how we respond to these situations. He says here to rest in the Lord and wait patiently. And don't fret because of the man who bringeth wicked devices to pass. There will be those men, and those things will come to pass. And we need to be prepared. How do we prepare? Well, we prepare by waiting on the Lord and resting in the Lord. Waiting is not always pleasant. There is a lot of there can be a lot of tears in waiting. There can be a lot of heart cry in waiting. And the psalmist said, "I am weary of my crying. My throat is dried." He got to the point where he had cried so much that there were no more tears. His throat was dried. "Mine eyes fail while I wait for my God." In that time of waiting, it was difficult. It was his heart cry was there and his tears were there. And he didn't know what to do, but yet he was still waiting. And so times of waiting can be difficult. So where does this power come from? Well, it comes from the Lord. Isaiah 40, verse 30 and 31 again says, "Even the youth shall faint and be weary. The young man shall utterly fall, but they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint." Where does your power come from this morning? Where do we get the power to walk and run and not grow tired and weary? Think about the eagle again. The eagle rises to great heights. It has no jet engine. You know, for man to rise to those great heights, they need some sort of propulsion to get up there. And they use a jet engine or some other propulsion. But the eagle has no jet engine. Sure, it has wings that it can flap and it can fly. But to rise to its greatest heights, it relies on something outside of itself. Their body, the eagle's body, is designed, and their wings are designed to maximize the power of the air. And so they soar on those unseen currents. We couldn't see the wind blowing those days. We couldn't see the thermals rising. But the eagle used those circumstances and used what it had, what it was given, and it rose to great heights with agility and ease. There was not a lot of power that it needed to extend that day. And Isaiah here welcomes us to see ourselves as dependent creatures. When we look at our weakness and we look at the greatness of God, he says, be dependent upon God. We are designed to rely upon an unseen power. We are designed to rely on something greater than ourselves. We are not designed to make it through life on the strength of our own power and on our own wisdom. And it's not a weakness of the eagle that he is so dependent upon the power of air. Rather, this dependence becomes his greatest strength. And so think about that. Can our dependence become our greatest strength? Well, it can be. It needs to be. As an eagle approaches a mountain, there is an updraft produced by the rising ground, and so the air produces an updraft, and the eagle will ride that updraft up over a mountain. And think about the uncertainties and the unknowns of life. They can look like huge mountains sometimes. It looks like there's a big mountain up ahead. How are we going to face it? How are we going to scale it? How are we going to make it over? Well, like the eagle, we need to ride the updraft. We need to rely on God's strength and ride up over the mountain. God is calling us to wait on him. And in waiting, we allow the updraft to lift our thoughts up above the obstacles that are ahead. Colossians 3 says, "If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things in the earth." You know, it is so easy to dwell on the difficulties and the uncertainties and to have our mind and our thoughts down low. And if we dwell on those things, if we dwell on the fear of the unknown, if we dwell on the what ifs of tomorrow and the worries and the anxieties of the future, we're going to fail to look up, to set our affections on things above, to look up above those obstacles and look up to the God who is above all and who is there to strengthen us and who is there to lift us up, just like the air, just like the eagle uses the air to lift him up. And when we look up, we'll see that the God who is the God of today will be the God of tomorrow as well. "I had fainted," David said, and these are the verses I began with or used earlier. "I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living." All of us faint and grow tired and grow weary, and we can succumb to that if we fail to see the goodness of the Lord today in the land of the living. He says, "Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord." And then I like the verse in 2 Timothy. You know, we think about our even the normal being shaken, and sometimes we even think the foundations of what we know and what we have is being shaken, and it might be. It probably is. But it says, "Nevertheless, the foundation of God standeth sure, having this seal," or this promise, "the Lord knoweth them that are his." And so we can trust in that. We can rest in that, that the Lord knows, if you are his, the Lord knows you, and the Lord will give you strength. That is the foundation that stands sure amidst all the change and amidst everything that's shaking. And then he goes on and says, "Secondly, let everyone that nameth the name of Christ depart from iniquity." And so there's two sides to this. Number one is that the Lord knows them that are his. Number two, if you name the name of Christ, you're going to depart from iniquity. And so we're going to live a life of holiness, a life of godliness, a life of righteousness, a life that follows the Bible. And then God will recognize us, will know us for one that is his. So may God bless you. May you wait upon the Lord. It's a challenge for my life to wait upon the Lord, to allow my strength to come from him. Hopefully it can be a challenge to your life that you can renew or exchange this, the frailty, the weakness of humanity for the strength of God. We can mount up with wings as eagles. We can run and not be weary, and we can walk and not faint. Let's kneel for prayer.